Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is the seminal episode number 20. We've made it to number 20. Can you flip and believe it? It's amazing. We are stationed once again at our super secret hideout, the base deep in the bowels of Florida. It's our awesome little man cave. And I am your host, Dallas Busha, and with me this episode is...
Al.
Don.
And Rook.
What's up, boys?
Not a whole lot.
Feels like forever since the last episode we talked.
Oh my god, it's been like months, I think.
Right?
One thing I want to start off, I did go read The Mighty Blue online, and you got four pages up?
It's five.
Oh, I missed that page. I got to go back. I like how you're laying the story out. It's open. It's not each page has its own composition. It's actually quite fun.
Thank you, Don. Yeah, it's, The Mighty Blue is a webcomic that I've been working on for a little while, and I guess I might as well pimp it out because Don brought it up. It's based on characters that I wrote about in a novel of mine called The Circle Theory. You can find a link to The Circle Theory on the side of our blog, and you can also find a link to my webcomic, The Mighty Blue. It's mightybluecomic.blogspot.com. Every Thursday, I publish a new part of it, and it's one page every week.
And it's on the sidebar of our blog, so if you got the show, you had to go to the blog, so just scroll down to the bottom and you'll see it there.
Right. Unless this is the year 2020 and we're finally on iTunes and you're listening to the old episodes.
Yeah, I just wish that the pages, the way it works now on the blog is you have to read the first page at the very bottom and work your way up. So
well,
don't
I'm
get
also,
confused.
My webcomic's also available on Smack Jeeves. And it's if you go to themightyblue.smackjeeves.com, I think it is. I'll have to double check on that. You can find my comic on there. Basically, Smack Jeeves is a webcomic community site, so you can find different webcomics on there. And mine, you can read mine from left to right. You'll read one page at a time, but then there's a little buttons underneath that says previous or next. Uh-huh. You can read the page, press next, and it'll go to the next one. So whatever is easier, whatever is your preference. On the blog, you'll have to read. The most recent posting is always on top, so you'd have to go to the bottom and read from the bottom to the top. But if you go to the Smack Jeeves site and look at The Mighty Blue, then you'll be able to read it basically from left to right. So, gentlemen, boys, how is everybody doing today?
Not too bad.
Good. Al gave us a thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Doing pretty good.
Good, man. It's nice to see you, Rook. Speaking of the Rook... I think we have a very special episode planned.
Finally,
with number freaking 20, we are finally getting around to the final member of the show talking about his favorite artist. Up until this point, all four of us have talked about our favorite writers, and three of us have talked about our favorite artists. Now, Rook, you're the last one. It's your turn to talk about your favorite artists, man. What's the deal? What's the deal, my dude?
Jesus. Yeah, finally I get around to this, right? So, and it's actually, unfortunately, not a very big list either. You know, I mean, anybody who's been listening knows I don't do a lot of memorization with artists and writers and stuff like that.
But what about the people that mute the show whenever you speak? What about those people? Like, tell them.
Quit muting the goddamn show! I got important things to say.
Get us up to speed.
As far as my favorite artists go, there's a few that I really enjoy their work. One in particular that I've gotten to meet and talk to and hang out with that is a really, really cool guy, Mark Texvera.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Very cool guy.
He was pretty prolific in the 90s, right?
Yes. Did a lot of Ghost Rider work as well.
Wolverine.
So, big surprise that I like him there, right? So... very cool guy. If you ever get a chance to meet him, definitely I say do it. Fantastic artist. Just altogether really, really cool. So, moving on from there, I know this is going to probably set people off, but I actually like Rob Liefeld.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you
that's
know,
all right.
You
We've
can
done
all say what you
bashing.
Want, but there's. Even currently, Rob Liefeld's work, you know, while it has not matured over the years, he's still got the same style he did back in the day. There's something about his artwork that when I see it, it brings me back to those times, you know. It makes me think about you know, old X-Force issues and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, that shit was dynamite, you know, back in the 90s. When we were growing up, when we were reading comic books, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if he was, like, an up-and-coming artist, he would be laughed at. Well, even now he's laughed at, but...
But he has a legacy.
Yeah, he is a legacy, I think. You know,
he helped influence mainstream comic books, and they got so much more popular and so much bigger because of him. The dude was in a Levi's jeans commercial. I mean, come on.
That's when I first saw him. It was in a Levi's jeans commercial. I had no idea who he was. And one thing I never stood was people bashing on him. He's not an artist I've ever liked the style. He was never somebody I ever read. But it didn't matter. A lot of people did. And I guess when you're that popular, you're always going to have people that bash. I imagine he's probably the one that's made fun of the most. And what always surprised me was, to me, he's one of the most influential people in American comics. I remember when X-Force came out, that was a major thing with Marvel, those Image guys before they jumped ship. When Todd McFarlane was, you know, taking over Spider-Man completely. Mm-hmm. Jim Lee, I guess they got rid of Uncanny and just called it X-Men. And then
they didn't get rid of Uncanny, they just started
second
one.
Yeah, they were running two books. Yeah.
Although now they have, I think last month or the other month was the final issue of Uncanny. But I digress.
Oh, that's okay. But I remember when I was in California, my nephews, one of their friends is buying X-Force, tell me all about it. He got the first issue. And I remember people I worked with kept talking about Cable, which I imagine that's who Rob Liefeld created. But extremely prolific and very popular. My nephews, them and their friends, put out some comic books in high school. And I noticed about 95% of those people were influenced by Rob Liefeld. They all drew like Rob Liefeld. And didn't he create some of Marvel's characters? Like, he created Cable, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, he created Cable.
And Deadpool, I think.
Domino.
I don't know who that is. These aren't characters I've read, but I remember my nephew was showing me Deadpool, which I thought was a reverse Spider-Man. But he talked with great excitement about the character.
Rob Liefeld is kind of like Tim Tebow. You either love him or hate him. Honestly.
Nice Tebow reference.
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but that's he started the whole Image. Youngblood was the first Image book, I think. I just remember when all that was happening, you saw young blood everywhere. But, you know, he was unbelievably huge, and I never hear a good word about him. He's not somebody I've ever read, but he is extremely influential. And so, anyway, it's not embarrassing to have him on your list. A lot of people loved him.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny to say because I know I've bashed him before on the show. I mean, which... He deserves it because he hasn't changed his style at all over the years. I mean, so many of these artists start out and you see their progression, you know. But
hey, are you Canadian?
You know, again with the Canadian jokes.
We love Canadians.
Which, by the way, in case you're wondering, I'm not. But, you know, I mean, he's never changed. You know, which, you know, I guess in some ways you can say, hey, stay true, but, you know, in other ways it's like, hey, time to grow up. Just a little bit.
I'm glad that you, like, actually added him on the list, though, because he is a very influential artist, and it's nice to see that, you know, you didn't completely turn your back on the guy, because he did define a lot of our childhood.
Absolutely did. I mean, X-Force was a huge book to me. You know, some of the themes that X-Force carried on, it was a very, very big book for me growing up. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Except for that one issue that was drawn by Mike Mignola.
Oh, don't get me started.
Mignola turned out to be a really good artist, though.
I know, and he's got his own style, but
yeah.
The first time we saw it was X-Force number 8, and it was such a far cry from reading these Rob Liefeld books, and suddenly, boom, seeing some Mike Mignola.
Yeah, this whole book was a flashback. And Mignola drew 99% of it, really. I think it was like the first page was Liefeld, and then like the last page. But everything else was Mike Mignola. And it was just like, what the crap is this geometrical horseshit?
You got to remember, we were like 10 at the time. You know, we were 10, 11 years old. thinking, what is this crap, you know? Sure, now we've grown up, and I think we both respect the guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's a fantastic artist. He was actually next on the list. funny story. You know, once I learned more about him and, you know, I started seeing stuff like Hellboy and stuff like that, I was like, oh, this looks cool. And I'll crack it open. I'm like, oh, it's this guy. Crap. But, like, his art style, really, it has a certain appeal to it that you just cannot deny. You know, he is a good artist. He really is.
The problem with Liefeld is that there was a Todd McFarlane before him, you know?
Yeah.
He kind of, like, was always thought of as, like, you know, oh, it's the other McFarlane guy or style artist or whatever.
Well, I mean, Liefeld, McFarlane, there was a few guys in that time period that were really interchangeable and disposable in some ways.
Yeah, there was a lot of guys, Wills Portacio, oh, what's the guy that drew Uncanny X-Men?
Not Jim Lee.
The guy before Jim Lee.
Art Thiever.
Anyway, there was a good number. Yeah. Silvestri, Mark Silvestri.
Those guys.
They were all the Image guys. They had that very similar style.
Image look.
Yeah, the Image look exactly. Yeah. So I can see where you're coming from, Al. But that was the hotness in the time. You know, that was the thing to do, the thing to be, the way to look for comic books, for mainstream comic books.
Yeah, it was a very stylized look back then.
I was working at a comic shop back then. I was selling you guys the comics.
Hated that crap, right? You were like, stupid kids.
I didn't. I liked Silvestri, and I liked the Jim Lee stuff. McFarlane and Liefeld, not as much. I could see things structurally in some artists that were better than other ones. And I didn't particularly like all the detail because it kind of, like, took away from, like, you know, what I like was more mood, maybe, more like,
hence,
you know,
Mike
design.
Mignola.
Mignola, yeah, stuff like that, yeah. But, I mean, yeah, there's no doubt that those guys influenced a bunch of people, like you guys, into getting into comics. So, you know, I got to give them his props.
Oh, yeah. They always had a bit of an anime style to me, you know, a manga style. Like I said, very influential, and I guess he's still selling. I guess he disappeared, but he's back.
Yeah, he came back recently and worked on a couple of books, but I don't think they really sold a lot.
Well, that's funny, because I would think that these guys can sell on their names alone at this point, obviously. I mean, clearly, a Todd McFarlane can come back, and which he has... every now and then, and he'll draw a book and people will buy it just because it's a Tom McFarlane book, obviously. Jim Lee, I don't even know if he draws anymore, but up until at least a couple years ago, he was still doing, like, Batman, and he was doing other books, but he's got quite a high position in DC.
He's a vice president.
Yeah, the VP.
But yeah, I think he's drawing one of the new 52 books.
Yeah, I was going to say,
JLA. That's right, I'm sorry.
Yes, that's right.
He's drawing their flagship flipping title, and I forgot about that. But, And which is great to see that his art, even though it's 20 years old, you know, his style, it still holds up to modern artists today.
Well, he's changed his style to be more of what you expect in comics today. A lot of comics today, I think you expect to see a little more realistic adaptations, or interpretation behind the characters.
Yeah, you still look at those Claremont Jim Lee books, though, and they're beautiful.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
They still look great to this day.
It's funny that Jim Lee's like the VP of DC, you said, and Joe Quesada is the president of Marvel, because they were both their artists at the same time.
That's right. Yeah. Quesada worked, actually, Quesada's, the way I found out about him was when he did Kevin Smith's run on Daredevil. That was his big book. Before that, I had seen him every now and then, but that's when he really became an overnight sensation, I think.
You mean the Daredevil run that never finished?
You didn't like that story?
Kevin Smith,
his first, the first eight issues? I thought it was good.
Don't get me wrong, but, you know, it would be nice to see Smith finish.
You know what was 10 times better? Sorry, real quick. The run right after that, it was Joe Quesada and David Mack, who does Kabuki. It was called Parts of a Whole. The best Daredevil story I've ever read. Blow my nuts, Frank Miller. That was an awesome story.
Now Tex Sierra, I really like as an artist. Is he local, or is he like... he's probably out of New York or something.
I don't
know
where he's out of. I met him actually at Free Comic Book Day one year.
Out of Yancey?
Over at Yancey, yeah. It was right when one of the Ghost Rider came back. I think they were only on their second or third issue. Not the current run, but the run previous. And he had worked on one of the covers along with the interior artwork and stuff. And I mean, this guy, he was just sitting there, I mean, holding court the whole time, you know. If somebody started talking to him, and he'd be sitting there, and he'd be talking away, and all of a sudden, you know, the line kept getting longer and longer. So he'd drag whoever it was he was talking to around the table and sit him down with him. And then he'd keep going through the line, still talking to the people coming up, but finishing the conversation with whoever it was that he was talking to prior as well. So, you know, that's really cool for an artist to do something like that. It's like, yeah, hey, how are you doing? 5 minutes, get the hell away. No, he was, like, ready to have in-depth conversations
with people.
Well,
I think that builds a good fan base. People respect you because look at John Burns, infamous for being kind of a jerk. So it's nice to see that does make a difference.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
if you're a
absolutely.
Nice guy and if you give, you know, the fans, the people that enjoy your work at the time of day, then they're going to respect you as a person.
And Tex and Leafield are almost completely different artists in a way. You know, one of them's real, like, tight and precise.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tex is really loose and, like, you know, it's interesting you picked those two in a row.
Yeah.
It's a weird, I guess maybe a weird analogy, but Tex Sierra, he reminds me a little bit of Bill Sienkiewicz. They don't have the same style, but it's got that loose, free-form, kind of dark, blotty, inky style. It's so neat.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that's one of the things that I like about Tex's work, you know. Funny story about Tex over at Yancey Street, in the location they were at the time, they had a door to the back room that whatever artists were there doing guest spots or whatever, they'd draw on the door. Well, you know, the one side of the door has got a ton of space left on it. Well, Tex goes, oh, okay, and he goes around to the other side that's completely freaking blank, and he draws this just badass Ghost Rider. While everybody else on the one side was just, you know, kind of doodling, giving little sketches, you know, stuff like that, he draws this just awesome Ghost Rider. So, like, once the one side of the door got kind of full, people started going over the other side, and they go to the other side and go, ooh, oh, crap, I guess I better step it up a little bit here.
I like how you call him Tex, like you guys are boys. Like, yeah, me and Tex were out drinking, and then Dal threw up on himself.
It's just easier to say that, you know?
That is very cool. I've never seen that.
Oh, yeah, they still got it at the shop in the mall, actually. Yeah, they took the door with them.
I figured they would. Yeah, you don't want to get rid of that thing. No. That is too cool, though. And I do respect the guy. He's a good artist.
Yeah.
And I respect Frank Miller, too, even though I just told him to blow my nuts.
All right.
Nothing but respect.
We got two. Moving on to three.
Moving on to three would be Mike Mignola. You know, guy from does Hellboy. Thank you. Those are the initials I'm looking for.
He do Lobster Johnson, too?
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
he doesn't draw him. He writes that an amazing screw-on head.
Oh, yeah, amazing screw-on head. God, I forgot about that.
It's
been a while since I've seen that.
One of his biggest claim to fame at the time, one of the things that I think really, I wouldn't say catapulted him, but put him on the map, was when he did Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
It was the movie adaptation, the comic book version of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, just beautiful, dark artist. You know, I mean, the guy has a way with art that can really tell a story just in the artwork. You know, I mean, you can almost just look at a panel and know what's going on with his stuff, you know, and he has a way of doing very unusual looking characters and creating them in ways and drawing them in ways that you just look at it and go, there's more to this, and you look at it and you want to consume more of it because you know that there's so much more behind the artwork. You know, there's a story behind the artwork, really. So
he was somebody started popping up in the 80s. I never read his books, but I used to see. I remember he did an Incredible Hulk for Marvel, and every once in a while I'd see a cover. He'd have the Hulk with like three yellow creatures, and it just always caught me. I think he did Rocket Raccoon. Yeah, Rocket Raccoon for for Marvel. And even though that's stupid. I glanced through the artwork; it was actually pretty good. He worked a little more detailed than he ended up, but he was to me the guy that he would appear when John Byrne was doing a Superman, or Mike Mignola did. I guess they did an annual or something. And Mike Mignola did a story in it. You know, he'd just pop up once in a while. And John Byrne did World of Krypton four-issue miniseries. Mike Mignola drew it. It was good. It was when he did Cosmic Odyssey. That's the one that I saw it in the store. I thought, well, that actually looks pretty good. And a friend of mine mentioned, what do you think of Mike Mignola? And he kept going on about Cosmic Odyssey. So I went and bought it. It was written by Jim Starlin. And I can't remember the inker. It was Carlos. Anyway.
Chicha?
I couldn't tell you.
Santana?
But, yeah, I can't believe I forgot that. Anyway, but that's when I became a huge Mike Mignola fan. That was some of my favorite work. Since then, he was somebody that just popped up and would do miniseries after miniseries. Some of my favorite works, again, the Cosmic Odyssey. He also did that epic four-issue series about the Fafner and the Gray Mouser, that Fritz Lieber character.
That's right. You let me read that.
Oh, yeah. Those are just outstanding. And I remember Mike Mignola mentioned that when he was doing that, Howard Chaykin, you know, drew those in the 70s for DC, and he wrote this four-issue series. And Mike Mignola was doing all these model sheets and character designs. What got me was all the incidental stuff, people's clothing, the costumes, all the trinkets on the side of the place. He has a strange style that it can be very simple and minimalist, and at other times he would put quite a bit in.
Well, and I think that's what bothered me when I first saw him, was how minimalistic his style was, when I was so used to, you know, these grander, over-the-top looking characters.
Yeah, all the Rob Liefeld, except for feet, all the Rob Liefeld stuff.
except for feet, everything was over-the-top and huge, including boobs. I mean, come on. Comic book characters never had bigger boobs than when Rob Liefeld was drawing them.
Well, that's what attracted, like, 14-year-olds, you know? That's why 14-year-old boys
read.
Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, you know, couldn't buy Playboy at the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we all liked Red Sonja.
Oh, or Red Sophia.
Yeah, Red Sophia.
Cerebus.
No, but Mike Mignola on the Fafner and Gray Mouser, Howard Chaykin made a comment, are you making a movie? Because he had all these model sheets and all these character designs, and he heavily researched it and just put a lot of the work into it. But he never stopped. It just kept going on. Another one I liked by him was that Gotham by Gaslight, the old Batman story.
Good stuff.
And but then when he came up with Hellboy, what was funny was the first four-issue series, John Byrne scripted it for him. And John Byrne even put a note in it that he felt unconfident, even though he wrote the story about, you know, putting a script in. And John Byrne said, give him 2 issues and he'll be doing it. Well, he didn't do it after the first 4 issues, he did start doing it. I find it funny, as much as I love him as an artist, all these series you guys talked about, he created and started writing. He became more of a writer. I think he's supposed to go back to Hellboy, this third series. But yeah, he's one of my favorites as well. You can't say enough about him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Last on the list for me, which I don't know if he ever did a lot of work in books, but he had the entire card series, Joe Jusco.
Oh yeah.
Marvel Masterpiece cards.
He was a painter, right?
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful cards. I know comic book cards are, you know, completely unpopular now. Nobody makes them anymore. But, you know, back in the day we had, you know, in the early 90s and up until like the mid-90s, we had comic book cards. And the Marvel Masterpiece series was one of my top favorite.
Well, that was another thing that defined our childhood, I think, was the Marvel cards.
Oh, yeah.
You and I and some of our other friends would try and collect them all. We'd be trading them.
Still have them all. Yeah. I still have Marvel Series 1, 2, I think 3 and 4. I have the first 2 X-Men series, and I have both of the Marvel Masterpiece series, the first 2 Marvel Masterpiece series.
I don't have any of mine anymore, but mine were alongside next to my baseball cards, man.
I remember when they used to bring the the silver card in them that everybody collected.
Oh, the hologram.
Yeah, the hologram card. And everybody would go bananas.
Yeah, I was working. We would sell the packs, and people would be like, oh, hologram. And they would get one. Oh, yay.
Oh, my God, I got a hologram card.
Like, you made the kids like
some of those hologram cards, you can't see crap on them anymore. Yeah. Oh, they're so
really
worn out and faded now.
And the hologram covers on the books, too. You guys remember
that? Oh, God, holographic. Oh, yeah. And remember the, what was that, the Phalanx series for X-Men?
Or? Yeah, that was a crossover between X-Men and Generation X, X-Factor.
And they had this strip down the middle, down the side of the books that had holographic pieces to it, because, you know, this whole series was supposed to deal with these bioorganic robotic entities, which was basically Warlock's race.
Yep.
So.
Thanks, Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, God. Yeah, some of the things they used to do to covers. Why don't they do that anymore, man?
Are those because you probably still have those books. I sold mine years ago, but do they still hold up? They didn't fall apart?
No, I've got, I still have all those books. They're all still perfect condition. I've got a lot of, like Ghost Rider, they did a lot of different stuff with, you know, double gate folds, cutouts. They did lifted artwork, you know, a lot of different things. Yeah. And, you know, you just don't see them doing this kind of stuff to book covers anymore.
Well, that was all the enhancements. That kind of went away. I was never a huge fan. I did like some of it. I remember Marvel did that Frank Miller, John Romita Jr. Daredevil series, Man Without Fear. I remember those covers had, I think the red was kind of metallic.
Yeah, I think so.
They were the raised embossed we're talking about.
Yeah, it was embossed, and it was the metallic foil.
I did like that. So there were some they could do that I liked, but I remember when the Batman stuff, when Bruce Wayne broke his back and that other guy was Batman, and, you know, it ended up being a big crossover war or something. The creative director at the company we worked for, he saw that on the newsstands. Oh, I almost bought it. That looks so nice. Well, he was going on because it had the emboss, and it had the silver and gold color embossed over it. Well, to me, it just looked horrifying. It was like everything in the kitchen sink on this cover. And this guy, it was almost like if you buy a new car and you put all the gold rims and the dingy balls and, you know, everything you can possibly think of thrown on with no restraint. But and then you started getting the multiple covers and all that.
That's the big thing nowadays is multiple covers, you know. They have, like, they've got, you know, the Virgin cover that has no printing on it, just the artwork. They have, you know, the guest artist cover, and then they have the regular cover.
Remember all the number zeros?
Oh,
When that was the big thing?
Zero issues.
I know in the 90s.
Freaking number.
And this got me upset. I stopped going to that store. They had a Robin miniseries, and it was a four-issue series.
Yeah, the Tim Drake stuff.
And, but they had four different covers for each comic. And I was
They got me, man. They freaking got me on that.
Oh, did you
I
get
bought them all?
Well, and that's fine. I mean, if you like it, you know, that's okay. What got me, there was I walked in the store. It was a big store. And there was a kid decided he was going to collect comics. So that was the big thing in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And he was there with his parents. And they were explaining to the owner of the store that they wanted to start collecting comics. So immediately, this guy's shoving the Robin miniseries on him, and he was showing talking about 12 issues, and the kid was listening, and the mother just said, "It's only four comics, and there's 12 of them." And the guy was going on about what a great idea it was, and then the kid
for him it was
yeah. And then the kid finally just said, "Well, I don't want to get that if I can't read them. You know, it's just four." I remember the dad pulled him aside. "Listen. This guy knows what he's talking about. You're going to be serious about collecting comics. You need to listen to this guy." And I'm standing there looking at the kid, shaking my head like, "Don't listen to him."
Yeah, and, this guy's just trying to make money. Don't do it.
Yeah, I try. But, you know, and that's the whole joke they were making about, you know, people would buy the comic that was sealed and never open it. And
yeah.
There was even jokes about you could print them blank and nobody would notice anything. You know, going back to that, the trading cards, I remember when it happened and I was completely bewildered by it. I remember the X-Men cards was the big thing. And everybody was buying them. Everybody's talking about them. And then I remember I walked in the store one time, and there was about a guy who's probably about 20, 22 years old. And he was getting a little tiny long box for cards. It was illustrated with X-Men artwork, you know. And I mean, it was kind of neat. But I just remember he could not wait to buy that box with his cards and go, you know, set them up. And I just kept thinking, I don't understand the appeal to these cards. And next thing you know, there was cards for everything. Everybody's buying cards.
Yeah, there was cards for everything. I even have... I picked them up in like the actual box. Like, I found them like discounted. The X-Force cards and the Ghost Rider cards. And by buying the entire box, I have like, I don't know, two entire... two of the entire series of both of those card runs for the X-Force, and I have two of the Ghost Rider ones. You know, and by buying the box, I also got all of the for the Ghost Rider ones. They were glow in the dark cards. They had like five special cards that glow in the dark. Well, I have all of them, and I have like two or three sets of all of them. You know, but you know.
What was happening?
It was something fun. It was something different, you know? I mean, I was never big into baseball cards or football cards or anything like that, so...
Well, what was happening around that time, I mean, I'm just... This is my theory. I don't know if it's true or not. It became the unholy alliance between the comic shop and the baseball card shop, and I think that's what...
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember we had our shop, and then, like, about a year later, the baseball card guy moved in next door, and then, you know, 2 or 3 years later... You're starting to see the comic book cards and all the collectible stuff. And I think that's what happened.
Well, they had cards for everything. There was Miss America cards. There were serial killer cards.
Well, we need to make some two-dimension cards.
Yes.
Well, my daughter, there was some that she wanted to get from that reboot cartoon show.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And even though I said I don't understand the appeal to this, I did... buy the cards for the Batman animated series. I walked in the store, I know, and they had them for 20 cents a pack. I bought them. It was neat. They had all the illustrations, little tidbits on the back. So, but again, it was something that completely bewildered me. That's what one of the things that shoved Marvel over bankruptcy back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Was they bought that comic card or that card company. They had a some process.
Flair, wasn't it? Was it Flair?
I think it was Fleer.
Yeah.
Somebody told me they had some process. I don't know if they could put metal on the cards, whatever it was. They were only one, so Marvel bought it to corner the market, and I guess that, with all the other business stuff, put them over the edge.
Marvel's notorious for flooding markets. They, they've been doing it since the 60s, so there's no surprise.
Yeah.
Now, I say that about the comic and the comic stores and the card shops, but as a kid, I do remember the Batman cards coming out and like buying them, and they were awesome. And Don, of course, you remember them too.
Oh, yeah. I got them, and they always kind of freaked me out. There's one where he was in a whirlpool, and I was, you know, like 4 years old. What's happening? You just, you know, Batman being sucked in the whirlpool. That was it. You know, I'm like, I don't know about this. Yeah, I remember those. Maybe that's why I didn't like cards.
All right, guys. Well, I think we're going to pause for a music break. It's a pretty compelling artist list. Thank you, Rook.
Mm-hmm. Is that
finally
it?
Finally got it done. Yep,
is that
that's
all?
It.
Yeah, that's it, right?
Done.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to take a quick music break then and then jump back into comics afterwards. This is an artist that we have played before. It's the phenomenal French musician, Pierre Legault. Did I say that right?
Did you say it right this time?
It sounds right to me.
Yes! Yes! Awesome. Thank you. This is Pierre Legault, and we really hope you enjoy it, and then we'll be right back. So, here you go.
There was a knock at the door. There was a quarter to four. It was guitar playing Steve. He said that he couldn't see. He had left to a bar. Got himself in the jar. They were all closer than night. The dinner's open, all right. We met a chick on the stool. Started shooting some pool. Invited us to a place where we could slow time and space. All we both walked through the door. A strange man. Yeah.
running for a while. I can see the little red. Yeah, we're ready, man. Okay. Who are your least favorite artists, Rook? How about that one?
So was that the Prime Minister of France?
No, that was Charles de Gaulle.
This is Pierre Le Gaulle.
like to call my boy Chuck D. Yeah, that was Pierre Le Gaulle, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for joining us.
My ass hurts. This stool is uncomfortable.
You had the best line right when we went to the music break. Yeah. Right when we went to the music break, you hear Rook go, "Man, I have the bladder of a 12-year-old boy."
I do today. I have to keep going.
It's all that delicious beer we've been drinking. It's the Pabst again. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I keep it in the jar, by the
way. All right. Gentlemen, boys. Man, yeah, Don, what do you got over there? You got some comics. You want to talk about anything?
I am going to bring one up.
He didn't come here to talk about comics.
That was last week.
Yeah, didn't you have that same pile last week?
Yeah.
Did you watch any Filipino movies this week?
Oh, no. Here we go again.
Half of our listenership just dropped.
They went, "Oh, crap, not again."
No, one thing I complain about all the time is when a series starts, I think we've all run into this, when you have a creative team on it, and then halfway through they just disappear, they cancel the book, they change it. I loved it when Alan Davis drew Detective Comics in the early 80s, before you two were born.
And, I was born in the early 80s.
Hey,
1980.
You should. Rook should have a shirt that says "Made in the 80s."
But you guys missed so much before that, I'm telling you. But no, Mike W. Barr wrote this series, and Alan Davis drew it, and I just couldn't wait to get it. And then Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli did a Batman Year One, which we've discussed before. So they took a four-issue series that these two men were doing, and they called it Batman Year Two. And they had a character in it called the Grim Reaper.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I remember him.
I loved it. I loved the series. They did two issues of it. And then the next issue, it had a Todd McFarlane cover. I didn't know who Todd McFarlane was at the time. I did like the cover. You know, it was Batman holding a handgun. And I that's kind of neat. I didn't really enjoy it that much. I think Alfredo Acala, one of Al's favorites, drew the next one. But...
He's from the Philippines.
You know, I mean, it just was... But we're not going back to the Philippines in this episode.
Okay.
But it just really upset me that it was just so harsh, and I never, even though I bought the issues, I never really read the last two issues of the series. And that's one thing that always irritated me, was that they never finished Batman Year 2. Well, I found out from a friend of mine on Facebook that the two of them in 1991 did a comic called Batman Full Circle. And it returns back to it. It has Batman and Robin, and they run into the Grim Reaper again. And I thought, really, I went and found a copy of it. It's just, you know, to me, it's Alan Davis. I like that on Mike Barr's writing. And when I read the whole thing, how the story finishes, it is full circle. It was a fantastic story. You know, and I'm just thinking about this came out. The Valerian stuff is coming out in English again. I just need to whine more.
Yeah, that is a nice book. You know, we talked before you mentioned it, and I thought that... I'd never seen it before, but yeah, I have seen that book before. Alan Davis is an excellent artist. I think he's got a book out now, I think, that was really nice. I don't know if it was I forgot what character it was, but it just came out at the store, so you might be want to be on. I think it's a Captain America that I saw,
really?
By Alan Davis. Yeah, it looks really, really nice.
Yeah, I like, he puts a lot of stuff into everything he does. I thought what this was is that they took the first two issues and then he redrew the next issues he missed, but it's not. It's a completely new story that ties into it. But yeah, it was really nice.
Groovy.
One other thing I brought in. You know, everybody talks about the DC New 52.
Oh yeah.
I honestly didn't have any interest in reading any of the books. I just figured if there's something that was on the shelf that I liked, I'd pick it up. Well, there was one. It was OMAC by Dan DiDio and Keith Geffen. And I like the Jack Kirby OMAC. That's some of my favorite Jack Kirby stuff, is this what he did in the mid-70s. And this one, I've never been a fan of Keith Geffen. I could just give him, you know, take him or leave him. But this one, it caught me. So I picked the book up, started reading it, and I was really surprised that it is the Jack Kirby OMAC, and it's not. They completely changed it. They kind of turned OMAC into like an Incredible Hulk character. He's like a non-thinking brute. They changed Brother Iron into this controlling, manipulative, you know, thing. He can tie into anything. He can tie into iPods, iPhones, ATM machines, the internet. And they added all these DC elements like Cadmus and Checkmate and all the other stuff. But it has all the Kirby characters. But I'm surprised at how flawless and seamless everything fits in together. One thing people talk about in storytelling these days in comics is decompression. Where in an old story you could tell it in one issue or sometimes even 8 pages, whereas now it's a 12-issue series. And this one really surprises me when I look through the book, because the Jack Kirby OMAC series, it was 8 issues. And I remember the first issue, it basically told how OMAC started, and then it had another story inside it. And then each issue after that was one complete story. I think the last 2 issues is, you know, a two-part story. But basically there were seven stories in an 8-issue series. In this one, there's been 5 issues, and it's still telling the origin story.
That's definitely decompression for you.
Well, it's decompression, but in a way it's different. I like both series, but this one, there's a lot of stuff going on to it, and they're showing this character dealing with the fact that, you know, Brother Eye controls him, and all the elements happening in it. So, I mean, you can say things about decompression, but I find that I'm enjoying this just as much, even though not as much as happened in the story. There's a lot more to it and what's going on.
Yeah, Giffen's very Kirby-esque, too. I mean, he's really channeling Kirby in these books, and, I mean, the covers are very big and dynamic. It's great.
That's why I know in the beginning when Geffen started, he was, you know, everybody said he's trying to be a Kirby clone. And then I've heard people say now it's really interesting to see him channeling that again. He channels it, but it's working pretty well, you know. It's actually quite nice.
Yeah, they look really nice. I've yet to read these new OMAC books, but, I mean, they look great. They really do.
Yeah, I've seen them on the shelf. I just, I don't know. I've not been picking up much of the new 52, really. So, you know, I'll get to it eventually.
Well, they are canceling OMAC.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Shocking.
After that whole deal right there?
Well, I'll tell you, I bought the first issue, and I really enjoyed it, and I, you know, asked my comic shop if they save them for me. And, yeah, you know, I guess that's, if I like it, it's going to be the kiss of death, you know. But
do me a favor, never get into Ghost Rider.
Stop reading my webcomic.
But no, I remember after it came out, I was looking it up online, and there's people with blogs basically saying, I can tell you the first book that DC is going to cancel is OMAC. Of course, a lot of people had nothing nice to say about it. I've also read that, I guess they didn't plan on it being an ongoing series. It was supposed to stop after so many issues.
Well, we kind of knew that this whole 52 titles, you know, there was no way they were going to continue with 52 titles. Yeah. I think in some ways it was kind of like, all right, let's throw out 52 and all that, you know, so that people have that number. We like that number, and we'll see how many of them catch.
Yeah, throw them all at the wall and see what sticks, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The big ones will rise to the top. The good ones will
continue.
Yeah, I mean,
I think they knew, like, Batman, Superman, Green Lantern.
JLA.
JLA. You know, they knew all those would stick. But they really had no idea what else would. Like, Aquaman is really doing pretty good from what I understand. So.
It's all that self-deprecating humor. I think they make fun of themselves in that book, though, right,
mm-hmm.
Aquaman?
Quite a bit.
Is Geoff Johns writing that?
Yes.
Yeah, he likes to point out how Aquaman's so lame.
Yeah.
He's not lame. I love Aquaman.
I know. I'm not saying he's lame, but Geoff Johns likes to point out the fact that he thinks Aquaman's lame.
I just don't like the spear hand. That's something I don't like. But anyway.
What you got, Al?
Well, I've been reading these cool Tarzan books that this very cool guy gave me. And I think what's interesting about him, the stories are pretty good, but it's the progression of art. For Jesse Marsh is one of my favorite artists, and it's interesting how the art kind of changes from like 1 year to the next. It starts off really, I mean, for him anyway, tight.
What era is this? What, 30s and 40s?
50s. Oh, 50s. Late 40s, early 50s. He was kind of like a Milton Caniff type of artist. I think I've talked about it before, but as the series kept going on, he became a lot looser. And it's really interesting how, like, you know, I guess when you feel confident with the book, and since you're doing, you know, the book every month or whatever, you kind of like start experimenting with style. And I've heard stories where, to me, this is amazing, where the guy would just come up and basically take a blank page, just do like a design element all throughout the page, and then draw it to fit around that design. And it's just like kind of breaks every rule.
That's
of storytelling,
cool,
you know.
It's nice,
it's
hearing
cool
about artists that do things like that.
Yeah, and he was kind of like, you know, he was one of the few guys that I remember like people hating as a kid. And now the more that I look at his art, the more that I think he's incredibly influential. I see Mazzucchelli's newer work influenced by Jesse Marsh. I seen
nice.
Like an underground guy called Gary Panter, Tony Salmons.
Yeah.
Tony Salmons. They're pretty interesting book. And what's interesting is since you're going through a whole progression of years, you're seeing the changes. And I'm gonna talk about it more in the next episode. But I'm really enjoying the heck
nice.
Out of them. So yeah.
Speaking of Mazzucchelli, have you read Asterios Polypi?
I'm working on it. Yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah. I like.
Rook, I gotta let you borrow that. I guess.
Yeah.
Damn.
You guys keep talking about it. Maybe I know I have to read it.
I gotta stop by and give it to you later
today or this week.
And
speaking of Mazzucchelli, it's funny he's become such an influential artist because I'm seeing his art style in the Lobster Johnson book that I picked up. I'm seeing it in Chris Samnee. I'm seeing that influence there. I mean, I see Toth. I see some of the, you know, 50s comic book artists. But it's really, really interesting that he's influenced some of it's like the film noir comics, you know, the detective ones or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good actually. It's good that some books have a certain style and other books have other styles, because I hate it when it's all homogenized and everybody is either doing Neil Adams or Jack Kirby or whatever. So that's one good thing that I like about today's comics. But definitely, like, I'm going to talk about more about the Tarzan books, as they are really interesting. And now, of course, I saw on Amazon that Volume 10 is out, so I'll have to go out and get it.
Oh,
so.
Nice. Oh, you have the first 9, right?
Yeah, I got the first 9, so now 10
Sweet,
is out.
Man.
So, yep. All right.
Have you read anything recently, Rook? Anything good? Or
just been reading the normal monthly books that I get, you know.
Which are? Walking Dead.
Of course, Walking Dead.
Hack Slash,
Ghost Rider, The Boys. The Boys is taking in some interesting direction right now. It seems like a lot of things are starting to come to a head, and I'm really expecting some fantastic things to be happening, a real throwdown battle to be coming up pretty soon. And I'll honestly say, if there's not a big battle coming up soon, I'll be kind of upset. Because they're really, really driving towards this idea. And, you know, I'm really kind of looking forward to seeing some action in it. So, we'll see what happens.
Everybody's looking forward to some action.
So,
Don, I see you got a few other books. You got some John Carter over there. You know they're making a feature film out of that soon.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I saw the trailer. I think you sent it to me. And, I don't know. It looks kind of neat. It looks dorky, but I'm going to try to convince my wife to come with me to see it. I love John Carter.
Yeah, what's funny is when I saw that trailer, I was already going, hey, look, it's John Carter of Mars. And all of a sudden it went, oh my God, it is John Carter.
You know what's weird?
What's that?
Is that that's a DC book or a Marvel book?
It's a Marvel book.
Oh, okay. Because it's being released by Disney.
Disney is releasing it.
I thought it was a DC book, and it was throwing me off because I saw that Disney was making the film.
John Carter is something that, I'll be honest with you, I've never read the whole story. I've seen Frazetta paintings. I remember in the early 70s when DC was, you know, they got all the Burroughs work, and they were publishing Tarzan, and they did Weird Worlds. And I remember I was reading John Carter, Murphy Anderson was drawing it. And the next thing you know, I think there was another artist drawing it at one point, Alan West or somebody. Alan Weiss. But it always confused me because I'd grab one and it seemed like I was getting the story from different parts and different times. And then Marvel started doing it. Gil Kane drew it. And, you know, I'd read bits and pieces of it. It was one of those things where I always loved it, but I didn't really know too much about it. And I just remember Marvel is putting out some other series, but that one, Scotty Young did the covers. And I thought, well, that's kind of neat. And then I glanced through and saw the inside. Even though it's a different artist, he still got the same type of style.
Man, yeah. Felipe Andrade and is the interior artist. This guy is awesome.
He is awesome.
I love this style. I have never heard of this guy before, but man, he can draw the hell out of this book, man.
He can draw, and talk about story decompression. This is another one. You know, I guess that's the difference. Comics before were written for 9 to 12-year-old kids in the past. Well, you can tell now that they're writing stuff for people in their 30s and up to 60s. The story moves slower. This is a 5-issue series, and not really much has happened, but it doesn't matter. I've still enjoyed it quite a bit. They've got other series. I may pick a couple others up. Each series, they're not trying to have a house style. I've seen some where it's just completely, the artwork style is completely different.
Now, do we know how much this is following the books?
Well, this one seems to be following the first one pretty well. It's talk about how he appeared on there and then, you know, met the princes, and he's captured. But I think it basically, he's just got to the city where the princes is at. He escaped.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, it seems to be following... Granted, I've never read the books themselves.
Yeah, it's been years since I've read them. So.
Oh, have you read them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never touched them. But
man, I see in the I digress. But in the back of the book, it's got a few pages of the new the Ozma from Oz, which is Scotty Young penciled. Man, oh, it looks so good.
Yeah, we lost Dallas. They have a preview of that in the back.
Yeah anytime you know I see Scotty Young.
You know what other book is that I've been picking up lately is the Game of Thrones comic.
I think you talked about that earlier.
I talked about that before.
Keep going, though.
Yeah,
I remember. That sounds familiar.
It's on issue 4 right now, I think. And staying very true to the books. Overall, the TV series and the comic, it looks like... Martin has a very tight rein on things, that he's not giving anybody any liberties with his characters and his story. They're following very tightly to the storyline of the book. It's kind of cool to see the book interpreted as a TV series and now into a comic book series as well, you know, because you're seeing completely different interpretations of these characters. The throne... In the TV series, you know, it's a single chair, and in the comic book, it's more of this grand chair with like a stairway up to it, and the vanquished swords decorating the stairway all the way up to the chair itself as well. So it's kind of interesting to see different interpretations of what he has written in his book series now from the comic book as well as the TV series too. So.
Yeah, have you read the book as well as the comic?
Yes, I've read all of them except for the new one, Dances with Dragons. I got to get my butt to the bookstore and pick that up. But, you know, the excellent, excellent book series. Highly, highly recommend it.
Very nice.
Now, the comic, are you enjoying the comic just as much after reading the novels?
I am. I don't so much have to read much of the comic, really, because, you know, it has been so recent since I've, you know, read the books, and you know, I'm rewatching season 1 because season 2 is going to be starting very soon. So, you know, I don't have to read the comic books very much. It's visually appealing to me right now more than anything else to see new interpretations of these characters that even when reading the book, you know, I get a little bit of a visual in my head of what these characters are, but I'm also able to visualize from the TV series what these actors have made them look like as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the comic books really just kind of adding more of that into what I've already preconceived.
Very cool. Don, you're doing a good job of being a host right there, man. Oh. Like, I picture you with like a three-piece suit and a sweet 1970s mustache going, so what do you think about the comic book compared to the...
Yeah, well, we completely lost you to Ozma of Oz there, buddy.
Well, you know, talking about the Wizard of Oz, as I said, when I was in Texas and my mom was taking me to these comic shops, every time, Wizard of Oz. She kept seeing those Scotty Young books.
Mm-hmm. And I was picking those up for my wife for
that's
a while.
That's right,
actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my mom was caught by that. She was wanting to get one. She never did. She ended up buying an Archie trade. She was so excited. Her and my aunt was like, they got Archie. Remember these? And they both traded it and read the whole thing. But I do think she was wanting to get the Wizard of Oz book.
I'm sorry, that Archie's comment reminds me of, you ever watch Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see the episode where they took Penny's dopey boyfriend to the comic book shop? And he's all like, hey, where are the Archies at? And I think it was Sheldon turns around and goes, on the supermarket stands where they belong. And he's like, no, you're thinking of, like, the old Archies. Like, new Archies? Archies, like, married to Veronica in one dimension and Betty in another. I just love that show.
Well, my wife watches the show. I remember I would kind of halfway watch. Whatever she watches, I watch a lot of times. And I just remember one time because, I can't wait to watch this. I call this the Nerds. She always refers to it as the Nerds.
See, my wife refers to it as, hey, look, it's you and your friends.
Nice.
I'm sure she's sitting at work right now, and somebody's going, hey, what's your husband doing today? I don't know, off doing Big Bang Theory stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, I just wanted to say another thing. When we were talking about John Carter, there was, again, back to Jesse Marsh, he did do an adaptation of John Carter back in the 60s for Dell, and there is a... Dark Horse put it out, a hardcover of it, and it's very, very nice.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and getting back to the Weird Worlds book, that also had the Korax, I think, by Mike Kaluta, and those are smoking.
Mike Kaluta's great.
The 70s were real big for Edgar Rice Burroughs' adaptation, so that was a good time. And it's nice to see that they're making this, this movie. I look forward to seeing it, actually.
Nice. So, I want to hear what you think about it, since you've actually read a lot of older John Carter stuff.
Yeah, and all the old like Ace paperbacks with Frazetta covers and all that stuff. Yeah.
Nice. So, guys, February 17th or around that time is MegaCon in Orlando, Florida.
Really? Anybody? Already?
All I want to know is, who's going with me?
Me.
Don just raised his hand.
I'm there.
We'll see.
Okay.
Come on, Rook, you said you wanted to go.
No, it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. We went last year, and I know you guys have heard the stories of Don, Al, and I going. So, you have a family, Rook. It's a little harder for you,
we'll
I understand.
See,
so.
Got to find out what's going on with the kid and the family that day, so...
Yeah, absolutely, but I'm looking forward to it. Either way, I mean, we're going to have some fun times, some good stories to tell on the show. I think it's going to be really cool.
Well, that's why we started doing the show. Ever since I've known Dallas, he kept saying, Don, let's do a podcast. And I wouldn't even listen to it.
Yeah, you guys don't know how hard it was for me to get this thing started.
Well, I just kept thinking, all I kept pitching was Beavis and Butthead. Me and Dallas going, you read this? Yeah, it's cool, isn't it?
It's pretty cool.
You know? And then I kept thinking of Chris Farley when it interviews Paul McCartney or some of these people.
Remember that one song that you did? Yeah, that
yeah,
was cool.
I just thought, and I just kept thinking Dead Air Radio. And then we went to MegaCon, the three of us were in the car talking, and the whole time, the whole hour and a half drive from, St. Pete to Orlando, it didn't stop. I mean, we stopped somewhere for breakfast, and the conversation just kept going. And all the way back, it just kept...
I think I fell asleep during part of the drive on the way back. And when I woke up, Don and Al were still talking about the same thing.
Yeah, well, it's, and then when Dallas said, let's do a podcast, I said, can Al do it? And it just hit. But, yeah.
Yeah, it was just like that, yeah.
But, I think Dallas, for 4 years, has been, he's been, Don, let's do a podcast. No, I'm not doing no podcast. So, it was all thanks to MegaCon. So, Rook, you need to come, man.
Yeah, it's nice that it all came together like that. And actually, this show almost didn't happen because I've been bragging about a new microphone that I got for the longest time. I brought that thing over earlier this evening.
Yeah, good job on that one, buddy.
we hooked it up, and my brand new sweet ass microphone canceled all the other microphones out, and it wouldn't work. So,
and at the MegaCon this year, we're all going as cosplay anime characters, right?
That's absolutely. I don't even know any anime characters.
I'll find one out. Whatever.
Let's go as each other. I'm going as Don.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, boys, I think we're gonna wrap this one up.
Okay.
If you don't mind. Does anybody have any last words to say?
Nothing.
That's great. You guys are enthused. All right. Well, thank you so much, folks, for listening to us. We really hope you did enjoy this crazy episode. We finally got through 20 episodes. We got through the four of us talking about our favorite writers and artists after 20 episodes. And I'm really happy and I'm really proud of it. So hope you enjoyed it. You probably found us on our blog, but if not, our blog is located at twodimensionpodcast.blogspot.com. That's 2-T-W-O. On there, under every episode, there's a description of the episode and links to stuff that we're talking about. And if you click on the links, you can read more about that stuff. So enjoy. Leave a comment if you'd like. We'd love it. We'll get back to you. You can also find us on Facebook. Just keyword 2-Dimension Podcast and friend us. You know, we'd love to talk to you guys. Otherwise, enjoy the rest of your week and look forward to the next episode, which should be coming out next week. And until then, take care of yourselves and read more comics.